Coach Mo.
Hey, it's Coach Mo.
Hey, it's Coach Mo.
Knowing what you want to accomplish professionally is just the beginning. I'm Coach Mo, and this podcast is for young professionals and emerging leaders who want to lead, achieve, and succeed at work. You've got executive ambitions and the drive to get there. Join me for perspective, insights, and thought-provoking questions that only you can answer. Today's episode starts now.
Tuesdays with Coach Mo.
Two experts in psychology are quoted as saying, "Everyone knows what an emotion is until asked to give a definition. Then it seems nobody knows." Emotions play an important role in how we live and work because they're really the roots of our unique range of thoughts and behaviors. And I imagine that this statement is not some profound new awareness for you. But I am going to go out on a limb and say that finding those right words to describe your emotions related to a particular person or situation coming up within you may in fact be a challenge. And unchecked emotions in the workplace may be that very thing that sabotage and ultimately derail your career. To the frequent listeners and subscribers of the Tuesdays with Coach Mo podcast, you know that I'm not about career derailers, but I am about career advancing, which I hope is one of the reasons you catch each and every bi-weekly episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Executive Coach Monique Betty, affectionately known as Coach Mo, connecting with you from sunny South Florida. Now, on today's show, I'm joined by Carla McLaren, an award-winning author, empathy expert, and workplace consultant. In addition to creating a groundbreaking process that reveals the genius and healing power within the emotional realm, Carla is the author of The Power of Emotions at Work and The Language of Emotions. As you enjoy today's podcast, I'm going to make a request of you. Listen with the ears of your professional self, because we're going to be laser focused on discussing emotions at work. So kindly set aside any consideration for emotions that are really related to what's going on with you and maybe a significant other or your BFF, or possibly your parents or kids or other members of your friend and family circles. By sharpening your focus, I hope that you will consider application of today's content related to your specific workplace. As I prepared for my conversation with Carla, I actually came across some research that revealed that the more often employees express negative emotions, the more it affects the people around them. You know, I thought to myself, yes, I've actually seen that. I remember one senior leader in particular working at the company headquarters where I worked, and he had a reputation for just simply being mean. And when he walked the halls, people quickly jumped into their offices for fear that he'd stop and start peppering them with questions. Well, this research I came across also revealed data that shows employees may be more accepting of negative emotions that come from their coworkers versus their managers. You know, employees depend on their managers to act as a leader, as a coach. So when a manager can't get a handle on their negative emotions, the impact on others is even more significant, really undermining employee engagement and performance. And because many of you do have direct reports or people who are dotted line reporting to you, it's important that you are equipped to manage the emotions within you and around you. You know, it's widely known that one of the greatest contributors to being an effective leader is emotional intelligence. You know, that barometer for your intelligence of emotions related to how you do your best work and how you relate to others. Now, what stood out for me in Carla's book, The Power of Emotions at Work, which was just released this summer of 2021, what stood out for me are the glossary of terms that are offered right at the beginning of the book. She introduces the term, she says, that this book explores the vital emotional labor and empathic labor that occurs in the workplace every day, yet is usually undervalued, ignored, or even suppressed. Now, the terms she references are research concepts and some that she developed herself. Carla actually went on to describe them as unmapped areas of workplace intelligence and behavior. Well, of all of the terms that she introduces us to at the beginning of the book, there were two terms in particular that resonated with me. The first was emotional labor, and the second, emotional work. Now, both of these relate to concepts of a famed sociologist. Now, emotional labor is defined as the concept of the paid work you do to display or suppress specific emotions and emotional responses in the context of your work. You know, in this case, I can't help but think about the flight attendant who's expected to be pleasant and happy and positive, yet knowing they're charged with challenging passenger management and are responsible for passenger safety in case of emergency situations. The other definition of emotion work is the concept of the work that you do outside of your paid position to manage your own emotions or the emotions of others to sustain your relationships and the smooth flow of everyday life. Well, in this case, it really brings to mind the multitude of stories related to microaggressions that many women and people of color have experienced in corporate America. You know, so before turning to my conversation with Carla, please be certain to catch the show notes for this episode by visiting TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com. That's all one word, TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com. There you will find a complete transcript of my conversation and links to resources that I share at the end of today's episode in the Coach Mo Knows segment of the show. Now to my conversation with Carla McLaren. Carla, I'm going to start our conversations with an excerpt from your introduction in your wonderful book, The Power of Emotions at Work, Accessing the Vital Intelligence in Your Workplace, because this really resonated with me in terms of what I've been seeing as an executive coach. Now, that passage is, emotions are everywhere in the workplace because emotions are a central feature of human nature. They aren't removable. And in fact, trying to remove them is a huge part of what created the failed workplace model that we have today. With that, I say welcome. And what is your source of inspiration for doing the work that you have been doing for so long?
Unimaginable pain.
That'll do it.
I always thought that there was something weird about me, that I would go into workplaces and just go, what is even happening here? Y'all, why is this person doing all the work, but nobody will say that they are? Why is this person in charge when they don't actually know what they're doing? Right? It's like, what am I seeing here? And I could never sort of settle in, right, in the way that you're supposed to if you're going to have a corporate career. Right?
Yeah, right.
I couldn't settle around it. I was like, what is happening? And why? This person's really angry. And you're blaming her for being angry when she's actually the only one speaking the truth. So what is going on?
This is actually not your first book. What is your published journey in writing in this area of expertise?
Well, I mean, my focus is on emotions and empathy. And so I focused first on that in the language of emotions and then empathy in the art of empathy. And I created a process called dynamic emotional integration, or DEI. And just looking at how emotions and empathy work. Mm-hmm. And the reason I went into that is because I noticed that most people put emotions on the bottom of all possible, you know, What is important? It's not emotions. Mm-hmm. What is smart? It's not emotions. What is valuable? It's not emotions. And I thought, there's a lot of shadow there. Mm-hmm. And if we've done shadow work, we know that all the power lives in the shadow. So yeah. I'm going there where nobody wants me to go. And so mm-hmm. that's where that came from. But also in looking at the workplace, I've done a lot of, I studied the sociology of work and occupations. And I became a human resource administrator, mm-hmm. and I became a career guidance counselor because I wanted to know what's wrong with the workplace. I wanted to like see the world of it mm-hmm. and understand the totality of it. Mm-hmm. And I thought if I got an HR, you know, certification, then I would be one of the people creating emotional wellness in the workplace. That was wrong.
Belief, though, that was a really good belief.
Wasn't it, though? It was like, I'm going to fix it. But what I learned in my certification process was to do primarily paralegal work, right? Mm. HR does primarily paralegal, hiring, firing, you know, benefits.
Staying within the laws, knowing the laws.
Stay within the laws. Their job is not to create a healthy emotional environment. Mm-hmm. If they can do that, great, but that is not what the training involves. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, wow, so the only people that we are told are a part of creating a healthy emotional environment, which is HR, that's not what they do. And what I've heard from many people, and you know, they'll be telling me when I'm doing consultations that just this awful stuff going on. I said, is there an HR department? Can you talk to HR? And almost to a person, they say, Lord, no, I'm not talking to HR. No.
It's like the last people to talk to.
Yeah, which is so sad. But HR does work for the corporation. Mm-hmm. They don't work for the workers. Mm-hmm. So workers are basically alone mm-hmm. dealing with difficult social situations that are very complex and require a lot of emotional awareness and a lot of empathy mm-hmm. that nobody understands. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Well, you think, I just saw a statistic that indicated that like 75% of executives are type A personalities, driven, get the results. It's all about the work. I said, 75%. I said, and you know, the tone for organizations gets set where? At the top.
Yeah.
And so therein lies kind of a question I have for you is from a quantitative standpoint, what is the cost to organizations of low empathy?
Well, one of the most interesting things about empathy is that in hierarchies, empathy is damaged throughout the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. The higher you are in the hierarchy, the lower your empathy becomes because the hierarchy itself creates an artificial separation between people. Mm-hmm. So the higher, if you're at the top of a pyramid hierarchy, that pyramid person is in tremendous danger of losing their empathy for anybody below. Another thing about hierarchies, and we see this in animals, is your job in a hierarchical system is to look up, right? You want to look at the people who have power over you, and maybe you tend and befriend at this level, but you do not look down because you don't have the kind of like psychic energy or the time to be able to do that unless you're a naturally very empathic person. Right. Mm-hmm. But even if you're naturally very empathic, the higher you go in the hierarchy, the more in danger you are of losing your empathy for anyone below you. Mm-hmm. So hierarchies are terrible, but mm-hmm. it's the way that we've set up businesses. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's another part of the reason that businesses, you know, most organizations are so emotionally and empathically destabilized and damaged. One of the things that happens too is if you're at the height of the hierarchy and you've lost your empathy, the rest of the of this social structure is going to need to increase their empathy. So you're going to have over empathy at the bottom mm-hmm. and under empathy.
Lack
at the top.
Of, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've talked to a number of people who left their high level careers because they said, Carla, I lost my empathy. And I'm a very empathic person. I said, well, the structure did that to you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and the cost of, is this a cost to everyone? Like we like to attack because we're in a hierarchy. We attack the people above us, right?
Of course.
We like to attack those people, but I see them with a tremendous amount of, you know, compassion because I'm like, you almost don't have a choice but to lose your empathy. Mm-hmm. And this is going to affect every part of your life. It's going to affect your personal relationships. It's going to affect your own emotional functioning. It's a very abusive system for everyone in it.
And you know, prompts in me a question that, you know, and we'll get to this talking more specific about what individuals can do, because what's coming up for me is how does someone assess the empathy level of an organization? If they're taking their talent somewhere else, they're in the interview process. And this is what I know I've worked with senior leadership clients on, is they're being sought after for some big role. And it's okay, now that you know what you know, you've been through the cycle of advancing in a corporation, what are the different questions to ask? I mean, it has got to move beyond compensation and strategic goals, but how do you get your arms around the culture and the pulse of an organization's empathy as an individual?
Yeah, it's difficult, especially if you come in high. If you come in high, you're not going to be able to get a feel for the culture. The culture will affect you very strongly, right? Mm-hmm. But the structure itself may impede your capacity to engage as a human being. There are some things that I look at. One, lots and lots of hierarchical layers and people saying we're egalitarian. I'm like, okay, that's not true. lots of in language. If people have to make up language to talk about what they're saying, they're hiding something in the area of emotions and empathy, right? If people talk about, now this has become more normal, you know, like what's in your wheelhouse and your onboarding and your this, you know, all these really
transformative. Everything now is transformative.
Yeah, everything's transformative. And I'm like, really? Transforming what? You know, if people don't know how to do straight talk and be people with you within the interview, you'll see part of the culture, which is to use words to hide trouble. Mm-hmm. Like people talk about right sizing, which means our business failed and we are letting our people down and we're firing them. Mm-hmm. That's not right sizing,
right? We're becoming smaller because we didn't do a good job of being bigger.
We failed and the little people are going to pay for it is what that means. And one of the things about an empathic culture is it won't look, I don't know if I want to say that, it won't look as professional as an unempathic culture.
So for example, take that further.
People will be more relaxed. Mm. They'll tell the truth. They might even be inappropriately truthful. They'll say, you know, these are the problems that we're having in our company and we've had them for 15 years. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can think of? Because we're at our wit's end, right? You would hear the truth from these people. And if you're used to normal corporate talk, you would say, you should never share that with me, right? You should have a lot of language about that rather than saying we failed.
Now, emotional intelligence, empathy, you know, we're hearing those terms being coined and bantered around. Why is this fad, you know, of empathy in the workplace really creating more of a problem than a solution?
I think because our understanding of empathy is so poor. And our understanding of emotions is part of it, because empathy is first and foremost an emotional skill. So if people don't understand emotions, and most people don't, because we've been trained very assiduously not to understand emotions, our empathy will only be as strong as the least understood emotion we have, right? So our empathy will be fine. And then someone will be angry in a way that, you know, knocks us out of our own place, and we will immediately go to empathy zero for that person because they're displaying an emotion that we do not accept in ourselves or others. Mm-hmm. So empathy is boom, it's done. And a lot of what people think of as empathy is simply similarity. It's you and I agree about politics, we agree about food, we like the same colors, you and I are empathic. And I'm like, no, you're the same. There's no empathy required there.
Right.
You're not doing any work. You're just being similar to each other. Mm-hmm. So I think there's so little understanding of what empathy is, which is our capacity to interact.
So there's something that you've coined, which I really want to hear you talk us through this. And why do you call the open plan office the devil's floor plan? Which it is.
The open plan office. I did my graduate degree in education and I was looking at autism and empathy, and autistic people are in fact hyper empaths, not hypo empaths. So, but I looked at the situation in which learning disabled and autistic kids are taught, and it's usually in large open classrooms where there's a bunch of different people at tables doing different things. And so that's an open office space. Mm-hmm. And what they found is that children's language scores plummet because they are listening to what's called irrelevant, meaningful noise, which is human speech. When people go from a normal office to an open plan office, mm-hmm. engagement and communication between people reduces immediately by 70%. Because people are overwhelmed auditorially and visually. Now they're trying to work on their computer, right?
And
there's people everywhere and sounds. And so you'll see people suddenly need three monitors. Mm-hmm. They're making a cubicle. Mm-hmm. You'll see them with headphones. You'll see them putting their purses and their clothing. They're trying to make it so that their minds and their brains and their language skills mm-hmm. will still function. Mm. So these things create stress immediately. And I think the only reason for them is it saves money.
Yeah.
There's no other reason for them.
Yeah. Well, and I recall in a corporate environment where the argument was it increased engagement amongst team members because you in a more rapid fashion could connect with that other person. You know, hey, roll your chair over across the floor, talk to the marketing person or the packaging person that was the case that was being
made. But the pre-existing, I mean, look, what I noticed that nobody creates a system for people to disturb a busy person. Mm-hmm. So now you're working on your stuff and then someone's right next to you and they feel like I'm going to engage with you. And you're like, what? And so now you've got to get back into what you were doing. Mm-hmm. The loss of productivity, the loss of communication, the loss of connectivity is so extensive in open plan offices, and people are still building them.
Hey, Executive Coach Monique Betty here, and I hope you're enjoying this episode of Tuesdays with Coach Mo. If you're a manager in the workplace and you desire to strengthen the confidence in yourself and your team for achieving high performance and productivity, then you want to learn more about my Coaching Skills for Professionals virtual training program. This all virtual program combines a series of live training webinars with real-time one-on-one coaching. As a professional credentialed coach with the International Coaching Federation, I will teach you proven techniques to support you in coaching your team toward the results you desire. Being a manager isn't about command and control. It is about coaching and developing others in a way that is most productive for them. Don't leave your success as a manager to chance. If you're ready to start developing your coaching skills or simply want to learn more, DM me on Instagram at Tuesdays with Coach Mo, or email me at grow@TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com. That's GROW, grow@TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com. Now, back to today's episode.
What is an effective, let's say, technique or approach that managers can use on a regular basis with their teams to strengthen empathy?
I would say to the extent that anyone can reduce the hierarchy. We are overmanaged and under-empathized in most American corporations. It's mm-hmm. too many managers. They could get rid of maybe half, maybe three quarters of the managers and be fine. And that people should not be managing people's work output. This is hard. I mean, it goes into a further thing of really egalitarian spaces where I give you the competence, autonomy, and relatedness that you require to do your work. And if you're not doing your work, instead of coming at you and saying, like, I own you, like I'm a school marm or something, is to say, what are the conditions that are required for your motivation that are not being offered to you at this time? Mm-hmm. Then if I make sure all the conditions of motivation are there, mm-hmm. you're still screwing up, then you and I can talk. Mm-hmm. But if the structure demotivates you, then there's nothing I can do with, you know, I can give you a gluten-free snack wagon. I can make you a climbing wall. We can put ping pong tables mm-hmm. everywhere and you will still not have the conditions under which you do your best work. Mm-hmm. So generally I look at the structure first, mm-hmm. you know, if a lot of people are having trouble getting their work done, I'm like, something's wrong with the structure. Then if it's one person screwing around, then I might take that one person off and go, what's going on in your home life? What's happening? You know, it's to do that kind of work is incredibly interactional. It's incredibly relationship-based and empathic. Mm-hmm. And people think, well, I don't have time for that.
I'm just thinking that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have time for that. But look at how much time is wasted chasing after people who are not motivated. Mm-hmm. It's the same amount of time, but at least this work, you can go home at the end of the day and thinking, I've been more human today, and I've created a more humane environment. Even though things aren't going beautifully, I have been a person and not a personality.
So a notion of treating people like humans, and something you said in your response there, Carla, was about, you know, if you're pulling somebody aside and you're kind of like, hey, what else going on? And kind of zooming out in terms of maybe family or health or finances or something else. Yeah. And I think humans are also being impacted by what's going on the global stage. It doesn't even have to be in our neighborhood, but it's the, what are we as humans taking as impact on the toll of what we know now to be happening around the world?
Yes.
And someone will say, I don't have time for that. And just like you said, okay, so you have time somehow for all the what's not happening.
Yeah, you have time for endless meetings where nobody gets anything done. Hello.
Yeah.
So much time wasted, so much waste of the capacity to engage as a human being, as an empathic, emotionally awake person with all these people in your social environment. The workplace has become our main social environment if we work. Mm-hmm. And if it is not emotionally well-regulated, if it is not appropriately empathic, then that is going to affect our health and well-being. And it does. Mm-hmm. It does affect our health and well-being in a very negative way. So what is it called? The Great Resignation?
Yes.
That's happening now. Where people have been home and they realize, wow, work is terrible. I don't ever want to go back.
Right. And it's like, ooh, you know.
Yeah. And then a bunch of people are saying, if I have to go back to the office, I'm resigning.
Yeah.
Like there's people who just resign. And then there's another group of people saying, no, I refuse to go back to that situation. Mm-hmm. And businesses are like, what happened?
Right. Yeah. And so I think there is some reckoning that is evolving in terms of our values that are evolving, because people say, well, you know what, if I, instead of taking on that impact of going into that workplace, of having that, what I thought was a dream job, I'm just going to adjust my lifestyle and be happy with what I have. And I don't need so much. Therefore, I don't need the income to prop me up and appear a certain way, because of the choices I can make in my life today to be happy and fulfilled.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, people have really gotten used to being at home, being comfortable, physically comfortable. Mm-hmm. And especially if they're in an open office environment, this is awesome. If I can meet you on Zoom and then mute you, oh my gosh, I can mute you. I can control my auditory environment. I have the freedom of my body being comfortable.
Right.
And most workplaces are not physically comfortable. They're not emotionally comfortable. Mm-hmm. And they're not empathically aligned with how humans need to be. And so a lot of the trouble that we've accepted as normal in the workplace can be changed. Mm-hmm. It can be changed. It's going to be difficult, right? All change is. But at the end, what you will have is a human and humane environment where people can do their best work and care for each other in this extremely complex social environment we've created. Many people do well in the workplace. They find ways to organize themselves, you know, so that they're not damaged. But so many people are damaged physically and mentally and emotionally by the workplace.
Yes. And they leave one job thinking that they're going away from something to get to someplace that will be less toxic. However, they find it's a different type of a toxicity. And then they take that.
Here's a new family.
Right. And you introduced the four families in your in your work in this new book. And so let's talk a little bit about resources that you provide. And I'd really like to hear a story of a client or someone who you've worked with that really kind of was, you know, brought you a source of pride that my work is having the impact I desire.
My work is done.
Yes.
Yeah, I do tell the story. Yeah. When people call me up, it's gone so far past where it should be that, you know, I kind of get all of my IQ points going at the same time.
Yes.
But someone I read about, this person in the book wrote to me because their very high-end spa employees were spoiled brats. And I went, spoiled brats. Mm-hmm. Let's just see. So we've got anger, jealousy, and envy. Those three emotions tell me a tremendous amount about what's going on in that social structure. Mm-hmm. And so I immediately ask, what's their turnaround time? That's a turnaround between when you do your first massage and when you do your next one. And it was 10 or 15 minutes that I went, there's a problem right there. Mm-hmm. They cannot rest. In a high-end spa environment or any high-end place, the neediness of the client is never challenged, right? So you've got a lot of pampered, wealthy, I'm sorry, self-absorbed people who need a lot and maybe using the spa staff as kind of free therapists, right? So they're pouring a lot of stuff off when they're on the table. And the spa staff is a part of the high-end environment. They're kind of embodying and creating it in their own bodies. And I was like, they need more than 10 minutes. To download that stuff. This anger you're seeing is them trying to set boundaries. The jealousy and envy, there is some kind of inequality here. There's a lot of inequality and there's some favoritism happening. I mean, I knew that right away because of what the emotions were doing. And I think another person might come in and say, they need anger management. They need to get their crap together because they're acting like children. Do you know what I mean? So we ended up creating an environment that was supportive to what they were actually doing, which is incredible emotional labor, incredible empathic labor that no one was managing for them in any way, shape, or form. They had no break room. They had no time to themselves. And so just changing the physical parameters of what was happening, because I understand what it is to do high-end work in a spa. I've worked in spas. It is terrible work. You get a lot of money, but you're like, I would rather have respect.
Yeah. Well, for the spa workers in the example that you've shared, thank goodness for whoever it was that brought you in to say that there's an opportunity for change here to create a different experience for our staff.
Well, luckily she trusted me because I think what she wanted to say is, yeah, they are brats.
Oh,
right.
And you didn't do that.
Sorry. Those emotions have really important things to say. Like if a lot of your people are anxious, anxiety is the emotion that helps you prepare for the future. There's something wrong with the workflow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's not wrong with the person. If it's just one person who's super anxious, maybe they're holding that for the entire group, or maybe that's something they bring from home. But if you got a whole bunch of anxious workers or a whole bunch of angry workers, I'm like, that's structural. Let's look and see what we can do to reduce what their emotions are responding to so that their emotional systems can settle and they can focus on something that is more work oriented instead of structure oriented.
And so along those lines, as we're drawing to a close for our time today, what do you say for the young professional who does have that desire to climb in the organization? And yes, the organization may be flawed. You know, what can they do? Because I do believe it begins with self. If you aren't doing certain things for yourself, how can you bring that to a team or anyone else?
Yeah. I have in the book, I talk about the emotions, the four families of emotions. To understand how the emotions work will help anybody, but it will also help for them to understand what's going on around them. And if they have any kind of capacity to, if they have any kind of authority, to maybe start making changes within the emotional realm of the social structure they see. Another thing is to look at how much emotion work they do and begin to understand the difference between emotional labor and emotion work and empathy work. And understanding all three are forms of work that they should be supported, they should be noticed, they should be identified, and they should be paid for. And right now, all three forms of work are there and unpaid. So a lot of times people will go home not realizing why they are so wrung out and tired because nobody identifies. the ways that they talk to the person in marketing who's whining about the person in production, and the production person won't talk to them. And so I'm going back and forth between these two people to get the work done. Nobody says, Carla, you are doing a massive amount of connecting and empathic work between these two non-speaking entities, right? Mm-hmm. Like they won't speak to each other, right. But to get something done, I've got to. And I go home and, you know, my partner wants to have an important emotional talk. I'm like, dude, I got nothing for you.
I'm spent.
I'm done. I'm spent. And I, you know, to be able to say, I did a lot of empathy work today and I did a lot of emotional labor. And so let me down-regulate from that, you know, or whatever. And then let's talk. But with no language for it, we just become sort of a victim to it rather than an agentic person doing this work intentionally. Mm-hmm. So just knowing what you're doing is a huge thing.
I love that. And that there is a cost to that, and that people are, you're paying a price, whether you're getting paid for it or not. Yes. It is a cost to you. And just for our audience, those four basic families, as you describe, and the power of emotions at work, accessing the vital intelligence in your workplace. Love it. Those four basic families, the anger family, the fear family, the sadness family, and the happiness family. So understand those families is a great place to start, because recognizing it, finding the words and knowing what all of this means for you, mm-hmm. I believe will help in your journey for moving it forward and climbing that ladder. So Carla McLaren, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your awesome, awesome expertise, the power of emotions at work. And we will absolutely be providing in the show notes a way for listeners to connect, follow, or engage with the resources that you provide. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk.
That was Carla McLaren. In this podcast episode of Handling Emotions at Work, you know, as a result of speaking with Carla, I'm going to start noticing the difference of emotional labor, emotion work, and empathy work, as each form should be identified, supported, and paid for, as Carla proposes. So take note, listeners, all three forms of work are currently unpaid in the workplace. So what are your thoughts? What would change for you if you were in fact paid for this work? Please send me your responses. Just DM me either on LinkedIn or on Instagram at Tuesdays with Coach Mo. And now for Coach Mo Knows, a tip, a coaching question, and a bit of inspiration. Well, my tip this week is, by all means, run. Do not walk, to connect with Carla McLaren. Pick up her book, The Power of Emotions. Again, in the show notes, I will be providing a link. You can certainly pick it up on Amazon. And also take advantage of free emotional vocabulary list that Carla is providing. Again, I provide that link in the show notes. But this list, by having language to help you get clear on what it is that you're feeling, you're then better positioned to take effective action. So it really is rich content. I strongly encourage you to consider taking advantage of that free emotional vocabulary list that Carla provides. Also, I'll provide links to how to connect with her on the various social media platforms. My coaching question for you this week, actually, it's a two-parter. What is a recent event at work that you describe as nourishing to your emotions? What is a recent event at work that you describe as draining to your emotions? And the inspirational quote for this week comes from Dale Carnegie, author of How to Win Friends and Influence People, a classic in the business world. And he said, "When dealing with people, remember, you're not dealing with creatures of logic, but creatures of emotion." Until next time, please do leave a rating and review. We hope that we are bringing you value and you're enjoying each and every bi-weekly episode. leave a rating and a review on the iTunes platform, and please do subscribe on your favorite podcast platform to make sure that each and every bi-weekly episode lands in your podcast library. Until next time. That's a wrap for this episode of Tuesdays with Coach Mo. Showing up here tells me you're willing to invest in yourself and your career. Get additional resources at TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com. Please subscribe and leave a review. I'd love to get your feedback. Till next time, this is Coach Mo, signing off.
Tuesdays with Coach Mo.